Fred Film Radio, I'm Matt McCutchie from the 44th International Film Festival Rotterdam, and I'm in the company of filmmaker Daniel Wolf, who is presenting his film Catch Me Daddy here at the festival. So thanks very much for joining us, first off.
No worries, guy. Good to meet you.
So would you like to tell us a little bit about the story of the film?
Yeah, it's a modern day Western, a contemporary Western set in Lancashire and Yorkshire, a boy and girl on the run. It's a kind of archetypal story of a father and daughter, and a kind of age-old clash of fathers and daughters, but set within this Western. A group of guys roll into town. 150 years ago, they would have come in on horses, and this they come in cars, and they're looking for a girl. It plays out over one night, and modern day thriller, Western,
noir.
Noir influences, yeah, like a kind of a dark night for all the characters.
The story deals with some really deep issues and contemporary issues.
You've got two cultures colliding. You know, you've got a girl on the cusp of womanhood who wants to explore, you know, a life, who's been brought up in the West, and you've got a father from a kind of patriarchal system who's struggling with that, and who fundamentally can't deal with her behavior, and she leaves home, and it's about the repercussions after that. But like I said, we don't explore. It's definitely not an issues film. Let's put it that way.
Right. So you're not trying to, like, you know, be too push an issue. You're looking at the story itself. You're looking at the characters that you.
Yeah, it's about a group of individuals. It's about a group of broken individuals. I think it's to me, it's an ensemble piece. I mean, I've said father and daughter, but you know, it's the group of guys that go after the girl. It's the guy that lives with the girl. It's this world. It's an ensemble, and all the characters are kind of, you know, they're broken, and they're all struggling within their own belief systems and their own, trapped within their own schema, trying to, you know, break free. So, you know, whether that's the kind of a very kind of specific viewpoint that the father has, or Tony the driver, you know, he's struggling to break free of his own problems.
But was there a specific reason that inspired you to sort of explore this kind of story?
I'd been up at Ted Hughes the poet, at his old house, which is now a writing retreat. I've been kind of taking in the landscapes there. Our grandmother is from Oldham, so we spent a lot of time kind of where we shot the beginning of the film, that's Lancashire. So we were talking, my brother and I, about this kind of push and pull between Lancashire and Oldham, and Lancashire and Yorkshire, like where they meet, and you cross in Saddleworth Moor. It's a landscape we were fascinated with. And then we'd been writing stuff in very male worlds, and we liked the idea of taking a kind of heroine story, and like a true heroine, and Layla is a true heroine, and you know, there were news stories, you know, we were reading news stories, and there was one particular case where we were very interested in the use of white, you know, and the press used the term bounty hunter, or white paid. It'd become a contract, like a contractual arrangement. Some white guys had been paid by a group of British Pakistani guys to help hunt for a missing girl, and that had been reduced to this contract, and that became very interesting to us, and we felt there was a story there, and in a way that's why I say Western, because it's, you know, horses don't roll into town looking for a girl, cars roll into town like a beaten up car, and you know, but fundamentally it's the same. Yeah. The same notions, the same tropes. So.
This is your first feature film, is that correct?
Yes.
And you kind of have a prominent background in music videos, and that's kind of how you made your name. And do you think that kind of, like, gave you a different outlook on filmmaking, and helped you shape your views on the way in which you were going to approach this story and take it to the big screen?
Yeah, I mean, I just think having experience on set and just kind of, you know, definitely, and experience with, you know, we use the same crew. My brother and I have kind of worked on lots of music video ideas together over the years, and then, you know, so we started writing together. But Robbie Ryan I've shot with on a number of occasions. Hannah Edwards, the costume lady, you know, has done all the wardrobe for all my jobs. Tom Lindsay and Dom Lung, who edited the film, have edited. So this team already in place, and we, you know, we kind of learn a kind of you know, while the visual style is different to music, the music videos I've done, and there isn't one particular style running throughout. Street casting is obviously prominent throughout all my work and was continued into this. But yeah, I mean, it's a hugely helpful kind of way in, massively, and commercials too.
Yeah, actually, yeah, let's talk about the casting. It's amazing, you know, the performances are really great. How did you find the actors for it?
We just knew very early on that both my brother and I, with the films we like, I mean, that's not entirely, you know, we love all sorts of cinema, but, we love street casting. We're big fans of Bruno Dumont, how he uses street casting. And just also, there aren't that many actors and actors that fit within kind of, we wanted regional accents. We looked at kind of girls from the areas we were filming there weren't loads of actors coming forward for the parts, so they weren't existing, and then the male parts we wanted an authenticity to, so we just set out on an extensive street casting process, really, like months and months. We had a team working literally for months up north, you know, for men going for snooker clubs, nightclubs, taxi ranks, like through night places. We'd turn up in snooker clubs 3-4 in the morning, meet people, we'd hear about so and so, you'd meet, you know, we wanted a level of authenticity. For the girl, it was literally street casting in a classic sense, like on the street. And I think Gussie, one of the casting girls, tapped Samina on the shoulder, actually wanting to know the time, thought she would look great, and just said, look, can you come to a casting? She came to a casting. My brother saw a clip and her face really hooked him, and he said we should get her back in, and she walked through the door and she just had a great presence, so we knew immediately that she was right. And then you know, there's actors as well, Gary Lewis, Conor McCarron we'd seen in Ned and we were a fan of, and but all the actors can fit within. I don't feel the actors stick out. I think that's important. I don't care whether someone's a non-actor or an actor, as long as I feel that they're authentic and you can believe them in this world. And I feel that's what we achieved. But yeah, it was it was a long street casting process. But I mean, I'm paid off. And I think Samina worked really hard and was great. And you know, and she's seeing the rewards of that. I think she's got nominated for some awards and she's won some awards. She's won two awards.
The casting just makes it all the more authentic. They don't look like, you know, big A-list stars. They look real, and these characters are alive, and they make them, you know, even more real, which adds to the authenticity. But of course, it's also just the intensity of the film, because it's a really intense and powerful film. And we touched on it briefly. You mentioned Robbie Ryan there. The cinematography is wonderful. Most of the film takes place in a pitch dark setting, which is already quite a challenge when you think about it. So how did you work to achieve that look, the amazing look of the of Catch Me Daddy?
Well, we knew, I mean, early on we knew we wanted it to be dark at night. We wanted dark night, I mean, which you don't often get in cinema. Like a lot of 70s cinema I like, but like if you look at the nighttime scenes, they're not actually that dark. And it's like, we didn't want it to feel like a particularly moonlit night for much of it, you know, and use like, so we knew we wanted dark. I mean, for the daytime stuff, naturalistic, like use of light, but you know, not use of kind of lenses. Like I wouldn't say it's definitely not social realist film. It's not, you know, it's the visual portrayal isn't a kind of just observatory. We're trying to say something with it. You know, we looked at the photography of Paul Graham. He was an influence, you know, film wise. Again, Dumont, Alan Clark. We're big fans of Alan Clark. You know, but also a mix of cinema, Takeshi Kitano, Pasolini, a lot of Pasolini, you know, a lot of stuff. I don't know. And then we knew we wanted it. There's definitely this kind of feeling of structure and quite contained, and lots of locked off shots at the beginning, a kind of liberal use of Steadicam, and then it starts to kind of. Whereas, particularly in the kind of. Antagonist world, in Samina and Aaron's world, Layla and Aaron, sorry, in their world it's all a bit looser, and then these worlds collide and like it becomes kind of a bit more fragmentary, a bit more, you know, the nighttime, like they've taken codeine, they're in a kind of, you know, heightened, you know, there's codeine, there's cocaine, there's marijuana, people are in heightened states. We wanted to capture that through camera and also through sound design and through the score. So
the score too, I'm glad you mentioned it. Could you tell us a little bit about it? I think it adds a great atmosphere, whether it's like when you're playing Patti Smith or whether you're playing more atmospheric stuff. It just adds to the intensity of the piece.
Yeah, we discussed, like, a lot of the films, again, my brother and I, like, don't have score. Like, don't have a... They'd have, like, music play. What's it? They'd have a... diegetic music, but not non-diegetic. And, like, originally that's how we planned, but then we start. I don't know. That being said, you know, we were big fans of Popol Vuh and the stuff they did with Herzog. And so my brother's a musician, and he scored it. We had a playlist very early on, and a lot of the tracks stayed. Like, we always knew we wanted Patti Smith. We knew we wanted like Tim Buckley. We knew Nicki Minaj. It was a different track. Like, we knew we wanted this playlist that reflected the world and the characters, and again a kind of channeled the idea of a Western in some parts, but and then a more. The score to me comes from the sound, like from Yorkshire, from the landscapes, but also in a kind of, it has a hallucinatory quality, a kind of codeine, you know, like that heightened quite, you know, there's some very interesting sounds in there. It's all organic, it's not synth based, it's all like, they recorded gongs, they recorded stuff and layered that up, so I think it feels quite primal and quite, there's an intensity that I think works very well.
Absolutely, completely, it just represents the chaos, you know, the kind of frantic life that these people live. And I mean, these are people that are kind of marginalized from society in a way, you know. Is that the kind of stories that sort of interest you? I know this is your first feature, but are they the kind of stories that interest you? People living on the edge of society?
yeah, I mean, the next film we're writing is about a snooker player, but then you could say they're quite marginal in today's society. we're just drawn to... You know, this, we're drawn to a certain type of character. I think, interestingly, in this, to a very strong female protagonist. You know, but yes, they are people living on the margins of society. There's definitely there's drama to be found there. It's interesting. That's a good question. I don't know. Sometimes characters just appear to you and you explore it more.
There's nothing specific, basically. Whatever.
It's definitely not social comment. We're not trying to pass social comment. It's about the human condition in some respect. Like, they're just human beings, and human beings interest us. And these particular, you know, this particular group, you know, like, so as dark as people have described it, I feel there's an empathy to be found with almost all of the characters in it. In certain ways, you know, we hope that you can feel something for them. That was the aim. So yes, they're marginalized, but you know, we want to shed some, you know, allow people to feel, kind of further marginalize. Definitely that's not good.
So just kind of to talk about the actual, how you got the project off the ground and actually made, was it hard to raise the money for the film?
Yes and no. We were writing something else, and then we pitched this to Mike Elliott, the producer, literally as a paragraph, and he really liked it. He'd been up to Yorkshire. He kind of got what we meant with the use of landscapes. I think we probably mentioned the Ted Hughes, or maybe read him a Ted Hughes poem, and started to talk about the atmosphere we wanted to create and kind of the movies that we were inspired by. You know, at that time, I was talking a lot about kind of 70s independent cinema and Peckinpah and like kind of new Hollywood stuff as well, and he kind of got it. He commissioned a screenplay because I think we went to the BFI, but they put some money into a film called Honor, I think it was called, which dealt with a loosely similar, so they were like, look, we're interested, but and in the end I don't think they didn't production finance that. So once we had a screenplay paid for by EMU, we went back, we took it to Studio Canal Film 4 and BFI, all of whom were really supportive. You know, coincidentally, I just shot a music video. We'd just done one with a band called The Shoes and Jake Gyllenhaal, so that was good timing. I think something like that on the reel helped. Like, there was other interesting videos, but you know, I'm not going to lie, that was, you know, people see that and it has a bit of scale or the use of an actor. But it came together fast. I couldn't, you know, we felt immense support from all of these people. Yeah, and they've been great.
Great. Well, I mean, Catch Me Daddy is an amazing film. It's a very powerful watch, and I definitely recommend it. It's been one of my favorite films that I've seen here at Rotterdam. So thank you very much for taking the time and talking with us about it.
No, thank you. Thank you very much. Cheers.
Thanks very much, and this is Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.